Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Ontex Full Year 2020 Results Conference Call. Today's call will be hosted by Esther Barrauspe, Chief Executive Officer, and Charles Desmarais, Chief Financial Officer. For your information, today's call is being recorded. Following the presentation, there will be a Q&A session. Today's earnings release and presentation are available on www.ontexglobal.com. I would now like to hand the call over to Phillip Ludwig, Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Marguerite, and good morning, everybody. I'm Phillip Ludwig, Investor Relations at Ontex, and would like to welcome you to this investor and analyst call to discuss Ontex's full year 2020 performance, which we published earlier today. Before we start the call, just a few housekeeping items to take note of. First of all, I would like to remind everyone that the safe harbor statements apply to this presentation and to our subsequent remarks in the Q&A session. Specifically on the Q&A section, we ask that people limit themselves to two questions per time in order to give everyone an opportunity. Second, comments we make today about revenue are on a like-for-like basis unless otherwise noted. Finally, definitions of the alternative performance measures can be found in our documents. With that, let me hand over the call to Ontex's CEO, Esther Barrauspe.
Thank you, Phillip. Prior to taking over as CEO at the beginning of the year, I was an independent board director of the company for around 18 months, during which time I was able to gain a good understanding of the challenges faced by Ontex. This has meant that I have been able to start working immediately on what needs to be done. The plan this morning is that I will say a few words on the 2020 financial results, then I will spend some time on our key challenges, and finally, I will give you an overview of the priorities and actions to be put in place. I will hand over to Charles to take you briefly through the details of the 2020 financial results. On slide four, Ontex's 2020 results paint a good picture of the potential upside in the performance of the group. This set of numbers illustrates the urgency to restore top-line growth, to improve free cash flow generation, and to reduce the group's leverage. In short, we need to generate adequate returns on the capital employed and rebuild the shareholder value creation that has been lacking over recent years. Revenues were down 8.5% at reported currencies and 3.1% on a like-for-like basis, mainly due to contract losses in Europe and the demand shift to e-commerce, especially during the COVID pandemic. Adjusted EBITDA was down nearly 4%, and with the margin was slightly better than last year, the generation of cost savings was insufficient, and margins still remain below par. This was further impacted by very significant currency losses. In my view, the T2G program was not ambitious enough in either growth or productivity objectives, and furthermore, it has not delivered on the targets that were set. Free cash flow generation was down in 2020, and even though the absolute debt level remained at a similar level to 2019, the leverage ratio increased to 3.6x, and this is too high for our business. It is clear to me that significant actions are needed to improve the financial structure of the group. First, I think it is important to set the scene and establish a clear picture of the starting point today. Moving to slide six, I would like to remind you what Ontex stands for. We bring consumers personal hygiene and health solutions to help them with major changes in their lives. These solutions must be focused on consumer-driven innovation, being easily accessible and affordable, and we offer these solutions through different channels. On the one hand, we help develop retail brands in Europe and North America, and we bring our own local brands in other markets where retail brands are less present. Lastly, we deliver our solutions to hospitals, nursing homes, pharmacies, medical shops, and to our consumers at home. This is Ontex's DNA, and I think that this identity has been a little bit diluted in the recent past. On slide seven, you will see the different weighting of these businesses. You can see that baby products make up more than half of our revenues, followed by incontinence, which has increased already to one-third of our sales in 2020, and it will continue to grow further. Feminine care at 10% has remained stable, and it allows us to offer a complete range to our retail customers. The split of these products between own brands and retailer brands is roughly 50-50. And then our geographical footprint is led by developed markets with 65%, and the emerging markets represent 35%. Now, let's turn to the sector trends on slide 8 and how this will influence our strategic priorities. Ontex has a number of opportunities to leverage looking ahead. We have a positive underlying social demographic trend. First, demographic growth, and naturally, as population increases, the demand for our products will increase as well. Second, an aging and more active population in mature markets. This trend, together with the cultural evolution where incontinence is no longer a taboo, is driving the growth of INCO. And thirdly, the penetration and usage of our products will increase in developing markets as families reach a certain level of disposable income. We will also benefit from considerable shifts in consumer behaviors, and to take a few examples. First, shoppers are looking for smart choices, affordable products that don't compromise on quality. More consumers are looking for alternative brands, usually online. These sometimes called lifestyle brands are growing very fast, and they rely on companies like Ontex to provide expertise and innovation. E-commerce continues to grow in our categories, and we can support and grow together with our customers in their online channel. The search for convenience provides new opportunities for value growth as consumers look for alternative solutions to meet their needs. For instance, adult pants or baby pants replacing the traditional diapers. In the adult segment, we also see a migration from consumption in institutions to home care. And this has been intensified as a consequence of COVID-19. And in my view, Ontex is very well positioned to capture this opportunity because we have a well-established home delivery capabilities. And finally, sustainability. This is an increasing focus point for us, as it is for consumers, retailers, and governments. These trends are supported by hard data that we see on slide 9. For baby care, while the forecast is for stable birth rates in the next 10 years, this does not mean stagnation for Ontex at all. First, there is the potential as economies grow in developing countries. You see on the chart how North America daily consumption per capita is 5 times higher than in emerging markets. Secondly, you have the change in product mix with a move to more convenient products. Almost the total value growth over the last 4 years in the category was in pants, which command a price premium versus diapers. For adult care, the population continues to age, and here there are two interesting growth opportunities. First, an increase of 500 million older people by 2030, and again, emerging countries development. In this segment, you see the monthly consumption is 10 times higher in the U.S. compared to developing countries. In addition, we see a similar trend towards adult pants and light income with higher margins than the rest of the category. For feminine care products, the number of women in the population is expected to grow, and together with economic development points to a further growth opportunity. Again, you can see that the monthly consumption per capita is 2.5 times higher in Europe. In addition, there is an overriding opportunity, which is the shift towards natural components and sustainability. And on top of this, institutions are looking for integrated solutions to manage continence, not only products, but services. All these can give value growth in the market. Now, let's look at Ontex and the strength from which we can rebound. First, Ontex is very well positioned in its core markets, and I am on slide 10 now. On the top left, you clearly see that despite we lost some ground with European retailer brands, we are still the undisputed leader in the market two times bigger than the second player in baby, almost three times in adult, and more than three times bigger in femcare. And this gives us a significant scale advantage in our category. On the top right, we have our positions in healthcare, a very strong base to benefit from the market growth. On the bottom left, our business in developing markets. We have strong brands in important markets, both in baby and adult care. And lastly, we are a key partner for lifestyle brands providing natural and sustainable products. While this business is still relatively small, it is growing very fast, especially online. And it enables us to be very connected to new consumer trends and to shape our innovation pipeline. Supporting these strong positions, we have strong capabilities to build from. On slide 11, we have a long-standing and proven knowledge and understanding of the business to support our retail customers. We have a strong industrial footprint and the flexibility that can leverage to deliver customer differentiation. And last but not least, we have a highly experienced and motivated team of people, in my view, a key requirement for success. I truly believe we have all the ingredients to succeed. But first, we have some changes to make. I think most of you on the call know where the main issues are, so I will be concise with slide 12. In summary, the group has expanded into different geographies and markets without being able to manage the resulting complexity. Our scale has not been fully leveraged, and the silo approach hasn't enabled us to fully optimize our operating cost. In addition, G&A has grown to an unsustainable level. And most importantly, the culture of customer centricity has lost its place at the forefront of all priorities. And as a direct consequence, financial performance and returns are insufficient. I will now take you through the key priorities to deliver improvement across the group. So moving to slide 13, first of all, we need to simplify our business, brand and product portfolio. Second, we must bring back a customer-first culture, strengthening customer relationships and restoring confidence. Some major contracts were lost in 2019 and 2020 that will continue to impact revenues in 2021. If we are to win this back, we must rebuild our reputation and bring back unfaltering customer service. The first action I have taken has been to appoint a new leader for our European business. Thirdly, we must refocus our innovation. We must optimize the R&D spend to increase the cadence of new products and solutions. Fourth, we need to leverage our industrial scale to reduce costs and maximize our competitivity. Ontex was renowned for its manufacturing excellence, and we must restore the leadership we had in this area. The environment and social covers all areas of the business, and even though Ontex has done quite a lot already, we need to accelerate execution, starting by setting clear priorities and long-term goals. And above all, to deliver, we need to transform the culture at Ontex. We must simplify our organization with a streamlined management structure, proper accountability, and an efficient decision-making process. And we must work on a pay-for-performance culture where reward is earned and measured against KPIs. The first area for action regards simplifying the business and the product portfolio, and I am now on slide 14. We have started reviewing our geography and brand portfolio to define the footprint that will enhance value creation. We need to reduce product portfolio complexity and leverage product common platforms. And we need to define the long-term model for our B2C business and establish a strategy for scale-up. Customer centricity on slide 15. To restore growth, we must take actions on several fronts. First of all, we must rebuild our reputation with our customers and fix recent shortfalls in service and innovation to deliver market share in Europe. We need to accelerate our growth in North America, leveraging off local manufacturing. We must increase our focus on adult care to maximize the value from the growing segment. And we need to partner with our retailers to grow our share in their e-commerce business. Product innovation on slide 16. In my view, the innovation efforts of Ontex have become too thinly spread, and this has impacted the speed of bringing new products to the market. The main solution is to maximize the synergies across our retailer and own brand in terms of product platforms to optimize our investments. And we also need to work more closely with both customers to better capture their needs and also with suppliers to better leverage off their know-how. And lastly, our business with lifestyle brands can feed our innovation pipeline to anticipate consumer trends. Looking at operational excellence on slide 17, we will have to put in place an action plan for continuous improving mindset to deliver best cost. This will be a significant project designed to leverage scale, drive productivity end-to-end, and eliminate waste along the value chain. And in parallel, we must reduce our inventories while improving our service level. And this will also help the working capital. The portfolio simplification that I talked about a moment ago will be a key enabler to help transform our industrial operations. And now, I would like to turn to priorities and changes that are required across all the group. So turning to slide 18. Ontex's environment and social commitments are more advanced than the group has communicated in the past. We need now to set clear goals and a realistic roadmap to deliver. The first main commitment concerns CO2 emissions and Ontex's carbon neutral pledge. We are already well positioned in responsible manufacturing, for instance, using 100% renewable electricity in our European plants and 75% globally. The next area is related to the circular economy by reducing waste in our manufacturing processes, using recycled content in our packaging, and addressing the end of life of our products. We also must ensure transparency in our products, both in the type of components used and in the sourcing along the production chain. As an employer, we must put safety first and set a target of zero accidents. And finally, we must seek greater diversity in our resources and ensure equal opportunities for women and men. And this leads me to the culture at Ontex on slide 17. The overall corporate culture must be transformed, in my view. This is absolutely key to changing the group. As I said a moment ago, we must simplify the organization, streamline our decision-making processes to accelerate the speed of execution, and to embed accountability at every level of the organization. In this way, we can drive a new performance culture, and here, the implementation of a new remuneration policy is key. In my first weeks as the CEO of Ontex, I am impressed with how engaged Ontex teams are, and I will continue to drive this engagement while focusing on strengthening the talent pipeline. Much of what I have said now requires in-depth analysis for final decisions to be taken, to be able to set ambitions and targets, and to translate them into action plans. In the meantime, you now have a good overview of the new direction of travel at Ontex. And I will now hand over to Charles to take you briefly through the 2020 financial results.
Thank you, Esther, and good morning, everybody. I propose we move now on page 21 to review our sales. So we're reporting a like-for-like revenue decrease of 3.1% in 2020 versus 2019. Our top line was impacted by lower volumes, which accounted for a 3.9% like-for-like revenue decrease due to several factors. First, lower demand from Q2 onwards, reflecting less in-store purchasing and a shift to e-commerce, in particular in Europe and in the US. And we know that our retailers, customers, and their proprietary brands are less present in e-commerce, in particular in our categories. Second factor accounting for the sales decrease, lower consumption for notably the Brazilian real, Mexican peso, Turkish lira, and Russian ruble, underwent a steep devaluation early March in the wake of the pandemic outburst, devaluation which further deepened in the following month for the real and the Turkish lira. So finally, we're reporting our full-year revenue, the 6 million euro contribution from our acquisition of Feminine Care assets in the U.S., closed on the 1st of July, and which account for an increase of 0.3% in reported sales. We can move now to the category review on page 22. And looking at each category in detail, first in baby care, which made up 56% of our sales in the year, revenue was down 7.1% like-for-like. Main factor accounting for the decrease are those I mentioned for the overall revenue of the group. After a strong surge at the end of the first quarter, market demand for baby care products contracted in retail channels and accelerated in online channels as consumer purchase habits shifted, in particular in Europe and in the U.S. Demand also decreased in several emerging markets due to extended store closures and lower purchasing power, as we just reported. And contract losses in Europe, of course, also accounted for the decrease. We report organic growth in the U.S. and to a lesser extent in Brazil, driven by the launch of pumps, and these mitigated the negative trends. In the adult category, which made up 33% of our full-year sales, like-for-like revenue was up 3.3%. Adult products delivered the best category revenue performance for the third consecutive year, growing by 3.3%, with the three divisions posting growth in the fourth quarter. Adult sales in retail channels grew 8%, thanks to both our leading positions, supplying our retail customers with their property brands in Europe, and strong Ontex brands in Brazil, Mexico, and Turkey. In healthcare, growth in self-pay channels and higher activity in e-commerce and home delivery, boosted by mobility restrictions, fully offset lower sales to hospital and nursing homes due to the pandemic. We'll get back to this later in the review of our healthcare division. The shift in demand towards adult pens continued, resulting in sales growth that outpaced the overall category. Finally, in feminine hygiene, which represented 10% of our sales in the period, like-for-like revenue was down by 1.5% compared with last year. The ANA division reported strong growth in the first half of the year, thanks to higher U.S. sales, while revenue decreased in Europe, mainly due to contract losses again. And reported revenue, as I just mentioned, included the contribution from the business acquired in the U.S. at the middle of the year. So let's move now to slide 23 for the review of the sales of the three divisions, and we start with Europe. We report for Europe a like-for-like decrease of 6.8% due to demand contraction from our customer base, as well as a net negative balance of contract gain and losses, each accounting equally for the shortfall. Sales of retail brands were impacted by increasing online sales, where again retail brands are less present, as well as more intense competition from the A brands. Consequently, the sales decrease was mostly due to lower volumes, primarily in baby care, and to a lesser extent in feminine care, while adult care posted growth. Currency had a negative impact year on year, essentially due to the Russian ruble, so that full year reported revenue in Europe was 872 million euros, down 8.8% versus 2019. Let's move now to our America, Middle East, Africa, and Asia division on page 24. The division reported slight like-for-like growth for the first three quarters of the year, but posted a 4% shortfall in the fourth quarter due to lower demand and tougher competition in Mexico and NEAA, which was not fully offset by growth in Brazil and in the U.S. So overall for the year, the sales in NEAA were broadly stable on a like-for-like basis, inching down by 0.7%. Improved price mix in all three categories largely compensated for lower volumes, entirely in baby care, while adult volumes were ahead. America's revenue rose thanks to solid growth in Brazil and in the U.S., while our business in Mexico faced a demand contraction due to the economic downturn caused by the pandemic, as well as higher competitive pressure, which accentuated in the fourth quarter, as we just saw. sales decrease in MEAA, as a ramping of new business in baby diapers and continued strength our leading adult Inco brand campaign in Turkey, could not offset lower sales in other geographies, many of which face lower purchasing power, extended store closures, and higher competitive pressure. So our IMA division is the most exposed to currency movements, and those are the major negative impact on reported sales in 2020, as mentioned earlier. Out of the $130 million reported for Ontex as a whole, $109 million came from IMEA, essentially due to the Brazilian real, the Mexican peso, and the Turkish lira. Consequently, revenue of the division was down 12.3% at reported currencies. Let's turn now to healthcare on page 25. Healthcare like-for-like revenue was broadly stable at €442 million. Full-year sales benefited from a stronger fourth quarter, and the 6.2% like-for-like growth we report for this quarter was against a low fourth quarter in 2019, when shipments to a large institution were suspended before resuming in Q2 2020. The full-year performance was driven by market share gains in the sales page channel, which together with higher home delivery and e-commerce shipments, offset lower demand from hospital and nursing homes, whose activity and occupation rates were strongly impacted by the pandemic. We estimate at 15% the negative impact of the pandemic on our sales to hospital and nursing homes. Our home delivery and e-commerce sales grew strongly as convenient alternatives to in-store shopping in times of lockdowns and other restrictions to personal mobility. Adult pants posted double-digit growth after the successful relaunch of our main product line. Currency movement had no material effect on the reported sales of the division for the period, as our healthcare business is almost fully operated in the European Union and in the UK. We've done now with the category and division review, so I propose we move to the adjusted EBITDA analysis. Please turn to page 26. As reported earlier, adjusted EBITDA came in at €236 million at reported currencies in 2020, down €9 million or 4% compared with 2019. At constant currencies, adjusted EBITDA stood at €310 million, pointing to a €74 million negative impact of currencies over the year. Now, looking at the same detail adjusted EBITDA bridge we've been sharing with you since our first half results, the contribution of the main drivers of profitability reported previously remain on the same trends. Despite disappointing results delivered by many of these work streams, in particular in the commercial area, gross gain from activities carried out in the framework of T2G amounted to €66 million at constant currencies. Procurement and operational work streams delivered €102 million of gains, while commercial work streams had a negative impact of €36 million. Out of the €36 million, lower volumes accounted for €26 million, while marketing investment to support local brands and the product launches in the very beginning of the year had a negative impact of €10 million on our operating profitability. Procurement accounted for €18 million of the €102 million generated by the operational work streams, while manufacturing and supply chain generated €22 million, net of the €6 million incremental cost for new resources brought in to lead the manufacturing transformation. Moving now to the other factors accounting for the evolution of operating performance, raw materials indices eased over 2020, improving EBITDA by €45 million compared with the same period last year. Out of these €45 million, 25 came in the first half, and 20 were recorded in the second half, as indices stabilized by mid-year and inched up in the fourth quarter. The overhead cost reduction executed in November had little impact on the 2020 operating expenses, including R&D and G&A, which altogether increased by €31 million at constant currencies. Finally, over the year, we incurred cost of €14 million related to the pandemic, essentially for protective equipment, extra compensation for employees, and increased warehousing and transportation to ensure continued supply of essential hygiene products everywhere we operate. All in all, this resulted in adjusted EBITDA at constant currencies of €310 million and related margin of 14%, which is more than 30 basis points higher than in prior year. However, the strong currency headwinds from March onwards which intensified in H2, erased all of these gains. Overall, for the full year, we report a negative currency impact of 74 million on adjusted EBITDA, or 238 basis points at the adjusted EBITDA margin compared with last year. As a result, adjusted EBITDA reported was 236 million, and margin was 11.3%, still up 55 basis points despite the strong and favorable currency impacts. Let's turn now to non-recurring expenses on page 27. Non-recurring expenses for the year amounted to 38 million euros, down 46% compared to 2019. Most of these charges related to reorganizations, in particular the measures implemented in Q4 2020 to reduce overhead costs, as well as litigation. Expenses related to the internal T2G recognized in 2020 stood at 0.8 million. This very low figure reflects the strong downward revisions of the forecast cost for the implementation of T2G over 2019-2022, a 25 million reduction from 85 million announced initially to 60 million euros. Indeed, considering the disappointing results of most T2G work streams besides procurement, as well as the overall operating results of the group, performance-based consulting fees and management incentives were cut steeply. Also, the scope and expected benefits of several organizations initially contemplated were reconsidered, and the related costs revised accordingly. Finally, we turn to page 28 to look at our free cash flow generation over the year. So in 2020, we report free cash flow of 60 million euros. The 50 million shortfall compared with the 110 million reported in 2019 reflects almost exactly the lower cash flow from operating activities, which stood at 191 million in 2020 against 239 million in 2019. This 49 million difference is due first to lower cash generation from recurring trade activities for 35 million. We generated lower cash from recurring trade operations, mainly because of further reduction in working capital we achieved in 2020. We generated 23 million of cash, fell short of the 56 million generated in 2019, when we strongly decreased the various inventories we held at the end of 2018, and initiated action plans to accelerate the collection of trade receivables. Still, over the last 2 years, we have generated 80 million euros from the reduction of trading working capital, excluding currency effects, and brought working capital to 73% of last 12-month sales, with no increased use of factoring. We also had higher cash outs related to non-recurring items. These were 14 million higher than in 2019 and stood at 45 million against 31 million euros in 2019. And they include outlays related to the implementation of T2G for 26 million in 2020, essentially consulting fees and realization expenses. The other outflows related to other organizations, in particular the overhead reduction executed in the fourth quarter and to litigation. Tax payment of 33 million in 2020 were 9 million lower than in 2019, when we made higher tax payment related to the prior year. Finally, capital expenditure net of disposals stood at 105 million euros, or 5% of sales, and included all T2G specific investment. And as a reminder to conclude on cash, our net debt at the end of the year stood at 848 million, including leases, down 1.6% versus prior year, and our leverage stood at 3.6. Let me hand over now to Esther Berrospé for the outlook of this year and her concluding remark.
Thank you, Charles. Before taking your questions, a few words on the outlook for 2021 on the next page. Based on current visibility, we expect a low double-digit decrease of group like-for-like revenue in Q1 against a high comparable basis in 2020, with Europe sales hitting the low point in this quarter. I expect a sales recovery to start in Q2. Now our immediate focus is to turn our strategic priorities into deliverable action plans in a context of increasing raw material prices. And we will provide you updates on our 2021 prospects as we progress in our journey. I think we now have the beginning of a clear roadmap to restore shareholder value creation. I am convinced that Ontex has many strengths from which to leverage our recovery. For me, the priorities are clear, and we must start by transforming the culture at Ontex and putting the whole organization on a new footing to deliver. We will share our plans at a later date with my full management team. And now, together with Charles, we would be pleased to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question over the audio, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. In the interest of time, please limit yourself to 2 questions at a time. Again, that's star 1. We can now take our first question from Charles Eden from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for the questions. I've got a lot, but let's stick to 2. Firstly, I just wanted to dig a little bit deeper on your Q1 2021 guidance and to understand the thinking behind the double-digit like-for-like decline. I appreciate your private label exposure in Europe. There is a degree of opaqueness for analysts and investors, but I guess for too often now, the surprise, if you like, has been a negative one, highlighting incremental contract losses rather than wins. So can you give us some more details on this, what the feedback you're receiving from retailers as to why you're continuing to lose contracts and at the same time not win new tenders? And then possibly if you could provide us some outlook by division for Q1 as well, please, that would be helpful. And then my second question is on your margin profile. I appreciate there's a commercial sensitivity to consider, but given the share price trend for some time now, there's clearly skepticism in the market on Ontex's ability to drive sustainable margin improvements. So I was hoping you could give us some further details on where your margins stand today in your emerging markets compared to your developed markets. So I think this would really help us understand where the opportunity for improvement can feasibly come from. Apologies, they're both quite long questions, but thank you.
Good morning, Charles, and thank you for your questions. I'm going to hand over to Charles for the second question, which is the margins, and then I'll address your first question on the guidance.
I'll answer your second question first on margin, Charles. And first of all, we understand perfectly the perplexity of investors and of the market in relation to our ability to improve margin sustainably over time, and what is the geographic contribution of our different businesses to the overall margin generation. I think, Esther, we'll get back to this through for the other question in Q&A, but clearly the review of our current portfolio of activities is the first priority, and she will probably further elaborate when she takes the first part of the question. And clearly we know, and we've been clear about this now for the last 3 years, we have some geographies which have been dilutive in terms of margin generation, and where we believe it will take a lot of time, a lot of energy to turn around and get to a level of profitability which will be on par with our best performing activities. Therefore, as part of the review underway, we will have a clear priority to review where we should refocus in terms of geographies and in terms of categories. So that's therefore, where can we have legitimacy to play, grow, and play with sustainable profitability improvement over growth.
Okay, so thank you, Charles. Just to address your first question on, I think there were 2 questions. First is the, you know, contract losses and why we are losing contracts, and then I think you had a question on potentially guidance, giving more color by division. I start with the second one, which is, you know, we do not give a divisional split, so I'm not in a position to give you any guidance by division. And then to answer your first question on why we lost contracts and why do I feel confident that we can recover the losses. You know, in my first weeks as a CEO, I really reached out to many different stakeholders, including many of our top customers, to really have an understanding and have an answer on that question. You know, I think I have enough internal information, but I wanted to make sure that I don't miss anything. And, you know, I was reassured by, you know, the support that we have from our customers, whether they are current customers or customers with which we lost contracts. I think they recognize the strength that I mentioned before. You know, we have a very strong industrial footprint. We have a long history in this industry and deep understanding of the market. And I truly believe that we can be the partner who helps them developing their brands. And not only that, but taking advantage and not losing the wave of e-commerce because we need to recognize that there is a significant change in the market with sales more and more moving to e-commerce. This is not new news because this was happening before the pandemic, but it has been strongly accelerated by the COVID pandemic. And we also know that retailer brands have not their fair share in that business, and the shift to e-commerce is a big threat for them. And we can partner together to do so. But they also told me, you know, that we lost proximity to the customers, and that's why we lost proximity, we lost flexibility to react to their needs. And this has been historically our strength. And I truly believe that, you know, the international expansion, the additional complexity put us in a position that we basically invested more time in meetings than, you know, spending the time with the customers to really understand what they need and to really define together what the solutions are. But, you know, these what they need is pretty basic, and I think it is there because Ontex for many, many years has been delivering that to customers. We just need to make sure that we simplify our business, I was mentioning before, and this will come from making choices on that, you know, basically there is no taboos here. I'm going to look at every single piece of the business to really understand their role today and the role that those pieces could have tomorrow, where we need to make choices because we need to simplify our portfolio. But this is not only about making choices. This is also about, you know, making sure that we simplify the complexity that was created with our expansion. And to give you an example, you know, we have an opportunity to continue to serve different geographies and continue to serve retailer brands and own brands, but we need to leverage common platforms. Because today, the reality is that we are spreading our innovation euros too thin into many different geographies and platforms, and even without making choices, by rationalizing our product platforms, we could be more efficient on how to use the capital and offer our customers a better cadence of innovation. Because the reality is that the market became more dynamic. There are different trends in the consumer behavior, not only on the products that they are looking for, but how they shop. And I don't think we've been fast enough to really bring the necessary solutions to our customers to really react and take advantage of these trends. But at the same time, I am highly confident that we can get there because we've been there. And this is not rocket science. So now, as you know, to close this is, I think, first we need to make the choices, and then we need to turn very rapidly into execution mode. We need to translate our strategic priorities into concrete action plans. We need to define our goals and the milestones, and then we need to turn into execution mode. And back to your question on guidance. You know, the reason why I am not providing a guidance for the full year is because I cannot. I've been in the role for 7 weeks, and it is clear to me what is going to happen in Q1, also because, you know, our performance in Q1 is highly dependent on the contract losses that we had last year. Of course, the negative revenue performance in Q1 is also dependent on the fact that Q1 last year was artificially high because of the preloading as the pandemic was hitting the market. And then we need to understand, I am highly confident that a sales recovery will start in Q2. But I think we need to define the actions that will start impacting Q2 to really understand the full dimension of so how fast and how deep we can recover on top line and also on the margin. So I hope with this I have answered to all the parts of the question.
Yeah, thank you very much both, and look forward to hearing your updates in the coming months, Esther. So thank you both.
Welcome.
And our next question comes from Alan van der Birch from KBC Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. This is Alan from KBC Securities. Just two questions. The first one is regarding, I understand indeed that you, at this point in time, the strategic priorities are relatively high level, that you still need to do some work and put them in an action plan. But can you maybe give an idea to us by when you will be able to communicate more tangible targets or outcome of that plan? That's the first question. And the second question is regarding a comment you made on T2G. You mentioned that it was not ambitious enough and that it didn't deliver the expected results. I would appreciate if you could comment a bit further on that and maybe give some color on what were the main problems there. Thank you.
Okay. So thank you, Alan, for your questions. So the first question on you know, by when we are going to be able to communicate the actions. Listen, the work has already started. I do recognize that you know, the priorities that I shared today might be at a high level, but there is much more detail behind that. Now, I think we need to spend some time into making the choices. This is like a puzzle, and we need to put all the pieces together. We need to understand the choices that we are making and the sequence with which we are going to execute those choices. And once we have the complete picture, we will be able to define our financial ambitions and how they develop over time in the midterm. What I can commit is that I will take the opportunity of our quarterly calls to give an update. I don't think we need to wait until we have the full picture in place to start taking action. And I can commit to you that I will communicate as we take decisions and get into execution. Of course, you know, at a certain point this year, as I have my full management team in place, I would like to come back on a capital market day so that we can showcase the strategy. But, you know, also we can bring the strategy to life with my team showcasing it. It will come later in the year, but again, I don't think we need to wait for that. You will get news as things evolve. And I can assure you that, you know, the sense of urgency is there. I personally recognize, you know, the urgent need on turning around almost all our KPIs, top line, margin, free cash flow generation, and taking care of our debt leverage. And I can only commit that, you know, we will take action with the right sense of urgency. At the same time, I want to make sure that, you know, we have a very robust plan because the work here is that, you know, we start taking action and then we need to go back and change the course of action. So I think it will be very important that we put all the elements together and we really understand the sequence, how to fund all these activities, and then what we expect as a return. And for me, what is going to be very critical is, you know, I do recognize that, you know, this team has not delivered the commitments that the company made over the past years. And I think it is going to be very important that, you know, I get highly confident that we will deliver what we commit and that I take into consideration headwinds because I think, you know, the underlying performance of the company, if you remove all the headwinds, like currency, like, you know, raw materials, has been pretty good. But the reality is that the headwinds have washed out all the improvements. And I truly believe that those headwinds are part of the daily business. I mean, we need to take care of raw material indexes. This is not new news. We know that indexes go up and down, and you will have good years and bad years. But, of course, we need to take care of them. And currency is part of our daily business, so we need to take care of currency. So for me, it is just a question of making sure that we have the details and the depth of the plans, not only to deliver the improvement, but also to make sure that we have space to deal with headwinds. So with that, there was a second question that was
C2G.
The T2G, So you T2G, I think there are a lot of good things on the T2G. I think this was a very detailed program that touched many areas of the business. But in my view, the challenge with the program is, first of all, I think that the targets were not ambitious enough considering the headwinds that we are seeing right now, especially currency and raw materials. So I do believe that many of the things that are included in T2G, I'm not looking to change, but I think the target should go deeper. And second, I think the execution was done very much on silos. And so first of all, on the industrial part, I think there is a very good work being done that I can leverage on. But I think my big change there is I think we need to look at the industrial part with an end-to-end, on an end-to-end basis. I think there is an opportunity to further drive efficiencies by looking at the industrial part in an integrated way. When I look at procurement, manufacturing, and supply chain, because there is a very strong connection between the three things. And I think the T2G effort has been driven pretty much in silos, and now for me the change is to integrate all that to further drive additional efficiencies. And so that's one point. And then the last point on T2G is the commercial part. I mean, T2G had a very strong commercial component, investment. I mean, this was transformation for growth, and that part has not delivered. And I think that is the area where I believe there is more work to be done and changes to be made, because I do believe that the portfolio simplification and choices will be a key enabler of growing, of driving top line growth. And honestly speaking, to recover contracts in Europe, especially in a highly competitive market, we need to make sure that we go back to best cost, best quality, and best level of service. So I think everything is connected. I think we need to review the targets. We need to better integrate all the pieces. And we need to make sure that there is a very strong connection between having best cost, best quality, and best level of service with being able to grow in the commercial side of the business.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen.
And our next question comes from Karel Zoete from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking the questions. I have two questions also with regards to the turnaround program. The first one, you say it's about making choices. And with regards to that, what are the main criteria when it comes to assessing whether you stay in the market position or you potentially let go of that? Related to that, of course, is also the lack of pricing power in some of the markets we've seen over the years. And the second thing is, I think, on somewhat of a timeline with regards to a turnaround of Ontex. Can you share your experience or thoughts with regards to time turning around this business? That would be useful. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol, for your question. So first, the first question on choices. What are the criteria? For me, first of all, I mean, we look at the strategy and the role of each of the businesses in our strategy. And but I think we are looking at the right to win in each of the markets and segments, and also the cost and the time to get there. So I think this is a combination of are these businesses strategic to Ontex and key enablers for us to deliver our future aspirations and goals. Can we win in those categories and markets, and what is going to be the effort and the cost and the timeline to get there? Because in itself, I don't think there are right or wrong choices. It's a question of, what are the most interesting, it's a question of putting everything together and understanding, what is going to be the cost and the timeline to win in certain markets versus redirecting the resources to markets where we have a stronger right to win, and maybe the effort and the timing to drive the turnaround is going to be much faster and at a lower cost. So I think everything is pretty much interconnected, and that's why these are not independent choices. It is more about where we potentially want to divest to reinvest in to accelerate other things, and I think we need to put all the pieces together to have a better portfolio that will allow us to do more, faster, and deeper. On the turnaround, listen, I come from a very, very competitive industry that is appliances. I've been operating in this industry for 20 years in different geographies. And this is a very, very competitive industry where, very low margins, more production than demand. And, I've gone through this type of turnarounds in different geographies in different times. And I can tell you that it takes time. This is not something that you do from one day to another. This is a significant project, especially when we talk about the industrial part and making sure that we have an integrated way to delivering continuous improvement. It takes time. I would see delivering results as we go. But if you ask me, what is the timeline to really see this business in a completely different form or shape, it takes time. So I think I look at a 2 to 3 year plan. But of course, I see and I expect to deliver improvements quarter over quarter. Hope that I answered to the questions.
Yep, thank you. Very clear.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Fernand de Boer from Peter Cam. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my question. Actually, I have one left. And that's maybe regarding the timing, but also to the old plan. I think it's also about capital allocation because you have postponed the decision on dividend. But you said, okay, we are planning to have a proposal before the AGM, or ahead of the AGM, which means before May 26. But at that time, I think you also have thought of worked out your clear strategy, how to move forward, what will be disposed, what will be refinanced. I saw the article also this morning in the Tide that you actually said all options are open. So could you give a little bit more idea about how you are going to refinance and is that part of your plan?
Yeah, at this point, I cannot give you more details, but of course, it is clear to me that the financial structure of the company needs to be revisited. And of course, part of my objectives is not only to drive top-line growth and improve margins and improve the free cash flow generation, but it's also to improve the financial structure of the company. And, one of the reasons why the board has decided to postpone the decision on the dividend is because, we need to have the strategy in place. And, how to finance the strategy is going to be a key element. And, at this point, I cannot give you further details on how, but I can tell you that this is of course an integral part of the strategy. And
maybe just to answer more specifically, this is Charles. On your question on the refinancing of our current lines, which mature for most of them in September 22, and for $150 million of a bilateral loan in November 24. We have a plan to carry out this refinancing in the second half of this year. But of course, to do things right, we must first have a view of what Esther we want to do, what do we mean in terms of financing needs for the next 3 to 5 years, and therefore adjust our refinancing accordingly. And we have different options from bank financing to public bond markets. And we're reviewing this, of course, and we'll progress in parallel with the preparation of the Esther's plan.
Okay, maybe one follow up, and I expect the answer to be difficult, but let's try. One is, could you give a little bit indication, is there a bit of new plan, a lot of restructuring charges going to be involved? And the same question, is it very likely that you will take a significant impairment in 2021, or did you already review your balance sheet for potential impairment? And if so, why didn't you take any at 2020?
Well, the answer to your last question is very simple. We carried out with all of care review of the goodwill that we run our books on the basis of where it's allocated, and our conclusion is was that no impairment was necessary. Of course, this is something that we review twice a year, or more frequently if events or occurrences were imposing us to do so. So the answer to your question about 2020 is very clear. Now, what will happen in 2021 will highly depend, of course, on the results of the year, of the evolution of our share price, and of course, of the plan that Westair will put together.
Okay, thank you very much.
And our next question comes from Reg Watson from ING. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Esther. You mentioned several times transformation of culture, and it's a key point of one of the six points for the action plan. I can appreciate that with things like operational excellence and customer centricity, you can get back to the high points of where you used to be. But organization and culture, if you're going to change it, presumably you're not changing it to something that it used to be. Could you please share with us what you've identified as the shortcomings in organization and culture, and what fixes you think would be needed to address those shortcomings?
Okay, thank you for the question. And I think there are different aspects on the organization culture. So first of all, you know, I think as the organization got more complex, as the company expanded into different geographies, different business models, I think, you know, this complexity impacted the accountability and the speed of decision making and execution. So I think we need to recover, we need to simplify the organization so that we have single points of accountability, we cascade accountability and decision making to all levels in the organization so that we can gain speed and flexibility and a speed of reaction to the customer and to the market needs. And this was there one day, but then we are in a different company. We are now in a global company with different business models, and we need to recover that. And this will come through just simplifying the way we are organized, and of course, designing an organization that is well set to drive the priorities that that we are establishing. And then the second piece on this is performance culture. Not that the company didn't have KPIs, but I think there was a little bit of a disconnection between the KPIs defined internally versus, you know, the shareholder value creation. There was a disconnection between, you know, we have been compensating people on like-for-like currencies, while, you know, the shareholders, the value creating is based on reported currency. So I think there was a little bit of a disconnection and a progressive disconnection on the KPIs and how we rewarded people, and I think it is very critical to recover pay for performance culture. And I intend to do this through a new remuneration policy that we expect to get it approved in the next General Assembly. And there are very important changes, you know, increase the performance compensation, and also to make sure that there is a very, very strong correlation between how we pay our people and the shareholder value creation that that we are delivering. So, you know, the last part is very, in a way, simple to do. We set the remuneration policy and we drive hopefully different behaviors. The first part is a little bit more complicated because, you know, redesigning an organization is not something that you do from one day to another, but I think it can be done. And it also starts from, you know, I need to form my team. I just mentioned that We just have appointed a new leader for Europe. We are in the midst of a transition of a CFO. As you know, Charles announced that he's retiring sometime soon, and so there will be also some leadership changes, and with that, we are going to make sure that we go into the organization design and the simplification of the organization.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. And for my second question, you mentioned both Ontex's strength as being a key partner for lifestyle brands and also in the portfolio assessment, sort of a review of D2C. I think I'm not alone in being a little frustrated in seeing these pockets of growth not being prioritized or emphasized more going forward. What is your take on those two areas of the company?
Yeah, great question. I think both opportunities are really great opportunities for growth, especially with the rapid shift of demand to more online channels. I think these opportunities will accelerate. For the lifestyle brands, I do believe that we are very well positioned, and actually we are a key partner of the biggest lifestyle brands. These brands, in reality, are looking for a very reliable partner that can deliver very good quality products. And for me, on this one, I think we are doing a good job. It is a question of making sure that, you know, as this business develops, we continue to be a key partner, and we continue to work with our customers to develop their brands and to expand their brands into different geographies, because this is kind of a business model that started in the U.S. and was pretty much a U.S. only model, and now we expect to rapidly expand into other geographies, especially mature markets. And I think we are very well positioned because we have a good experience on serving these customers, and well positioned to capture the potential growth as the business expands to other geographies. On the D2C, I don't have such a straightforward answer. It's a great opportunity. But the reality is that the opportunity is there only if you can reach the level of scale needed to make this business profitable. And we haven't managed to do so. So I think the model is not wrong in itself, but we have not managed to get to the scale necessary to make this model profitable. And what I can tell you is that we are looking at how to do that. I mean, but the objective is to scale it up, and we need to see if this can be done by our own or in partnership with others or in a different place. But the reality is that, you know, we've been investing a significant amount of resources in this model, and scale is critical. I mean, this is not rocket science. So the key challenge here is, what is the strategy to drive the necessary scale to make it profitable? And we'll get there.
Yeah, and then cheeky final third question, if I may. Your predecessor was fundamentally and philosophically opposed to doing any business with Amazon. What is your personal philosophy on operating with Amazon?
You know, for me, I think Amazon is a potential player, and I think we need to recognize the potential that is there. I'm not going to confirm that you know, I think for me, I want to win with the winners. You know, we need to make sure that we partner with the customers that are growing. And if Amazon is one of those, of course, we are going to look at it.
Okay.
Thanks, Reg.
Thank you.
We can take another question from Eric Wilmer from ABN Odo. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Two questions from my side. First, I do want to press on the outlook. You indicate to expect a recovery by Q2 this year. I was wondering what makes you confident. Do you have cautious visibility on recent contract wins, or is this due to mix effect? And secondly, you mentioned that you want to simplify the product portfolio. I was wondering how you plan to combine this with a larger emphasis on your customers' needs and a larger emphasis on ESG where OnTex is clearly lacking key peers? Thanks.
Okay, so thank you for your question. So, you know, the recovery, as you know, our business, so first of all, when I talk about recovery, I mean, when we look at the year-over-year basis, Q1 was a very high base because we had a lot of preloading due to the pandemic, and Q2, as a consequence, was very weak. So, of course, you know, just the comparable base is completely different. And then, you know, Europe, when I look at the contract sales, Q1 will be the low point. And we know, because our business is, you know, it's pretty predictable in a way. We know it's all about the contract wins and losses, and we have the visibility that we should go back to growth starting from Q2. The second one on the simplify the product portfolio, you know, when I talk about, we are looking at businesses from the geographical perspective, product from the category perspective, but for me what is more important is what is behind. So this is not about having less products, less SKUs, because, you know, I'm also talking about the fact that we need to recover the proximity to the customers and the capability to be flexible. And we know that our business by definition is complex because we need to provide with the right differentiation to the different customers. But I think for me, the simplification comes on how we do that. And the reality is that as we put different businesses and expand it into the branded segments and different geographies, I don't think we did the necessary work to commonalize, so to drive common platforms. And I think this is a question of understanding, like, you know, the base commonalities that we need to have to reach better cost and better efficiencies, but at the same time being able to give the differentiation in the last mile. And I don't think this work has been done, and it takes time to do that, but I am truly convinced that it can be done, and at the same time have greater efficiencies from the cost perspective, and not only cost, product cost, but also how we invest our capital more efficiently and, you know, with the same amount of capital, being able to deliver more, and at the same time provide with the right differentiation to our customers.
Okay, that's very clear. Thanks for that. And if I may squeeze in one more question, to what extent could selling the Latin American business be an option, as this reduces FX exposure quite a bit, and as this business is also materially different from OnTex for operations?
Yeah, I can only tell you that we are looking at everything. So at this point, I'm not in a position to give you a concrete answer, but of course, as part of the portfolio, it's part of the analysis.
Thank
okay,
you.
Understood. Thank you very much, yes.
Thank you.
And I would now like to hand the call back to Esther Barrows-Pay for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you for your time this morning. In my view, we are entering in a new era for OnTex. There is lots to do. And my commitment is that I will keep you informed as we progress. Thank you again for your time and for your questions, and talk to you soon.
This concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.